Well, that's something. But you're laughing at me.
It's a big, I've said it's my biggest project to date, and I didn't just mean in terms of, you know, the importance of the release in my life, but also in terms of the fact I'm going to tour it for the first time. It's a double CD, which is, of course, is quite a big chunk of music to release in one go. So it's big in many respects, yeah.
Till they're reeling you in.
Welcome to K-Scope, the post-progressive podcast. Billy Reeves here, a Stephen Wilson special. The brand new double album, Grace for Drowning, is out now. An exclusive interview with Stephen coming up. Meantime, here is Like Dust I Have Cleared From My Eye.
Deep in denial. Like you planned it this way, but you're lost to me. Like dust I have cleared from my eyes. Your words have no meaning, so why stare up into the sky? Thank you.
Stephen Wilson from his new double album set, Grace for Drowning. That's entitled Like Dust I Have Cleared from My Eye. Now, very recently, I met Stephen at his home studio in Hemel Hempstead, just north of London.
Okay, Stephen, thank you so much for inviting us round once again. Congratulations on the record. You said something interesting on the website. You said it was homage, but you were keen to point out that it wasn't retro. What did you mean by that caveat?
Well, I think the thing with me is anything I do these days kind of ends up just sounding like me anyway. So, when I realised that, which was a few years ago, because I used to play stuff to a very good friend of mine who lived in London. He's moved to Philadelphia now, but a very good friend of mine. And I used to play him all my new songs, and I would always sort of preface playing him a new demo with like, oh, you won't believe how much I've ripped off such and such on this, or something like that. And he would inevitably listen to it, and he would sort of look at me at the end and say, well, it just sounds like you, you know. And I began to get the idea that actually I'm not very good at, you know, at pastiching things, because... And then I thought, well, actually, that's a good thing, because it means that it doesn't matter what I do, I can kind of reference these things, and at the end of the day, it still pretty much sounds like me. And that's kind of liberating in a way. And this album has been very much inspired out of coming off the back of working so much on the King Crimson remixes. Mm-hmm. And my head was so full of that music, having worked on it so intensely and gone inside the music so much. And I love that music already. I mean, I grew up with it. But to actually go inside it and dismantle it and put it back together again, you learn a lot in that process about how the records were made and how they did certain things, which in the Crimson case, in the early albums, was to kind of mix a lot of jazz with rock.
Yeah, I was going to say, because they essentially didn't have any reference points. They were just, were they sort of essentially jazz musicians who wanted to get laid?
Well, the funny thing is that with, you know, the so-called progressive scene of the 70s is that we now look back on it and think it was some kind of unique thing that came from nowhere. And, of course, it's not nonsense. I mean, they were ripping off left, right and centre, all sorts of things. And in the case of King Crimson, I mean, very much inspired by the Sergeant, the whole kind of explosion of creativity that came out of Sergeant Pepper, the use of orchestral textures in pop music for the first time, the use of jazz and pop music for the first time. And I think it's interesting that almost at the same time that rock musicians were starting to absorb jazz, it was also happening the other way, you know. Mm. Albums like Bitches Brew by Miles Davis, the early Mahavishnu Orchestra albums, you have this incredible cross-pollination going on for a relatively short period of time.
Who do you bounce off if you're doing a solo record?
Well, that's a good question. I suppose the answer is... The musicians that you involve, because I mean, I'm on this album, obviously I've used a lot of, as I did on the previous album, but particularly in this album I've used a lot of other musicians, and I think the last thing I would want to do would be to bring in such a fantastic musician, you know, and just tell them what notes to play and how to play them. They'll be pointless, you know. I'm kind of relying on them to bring something to the record that I would never have thought of. Also, I think, you know, obviously I do play the songs to people. Lasser is a very important sounding board, the guy who collaborates with me on all the visuals. I mean, he's pretty much the first person to hear anything, you know. Andy, my manager, Michael, my friend Michael from Opeth, who's also made a very similar, not music, it sounds very different, but I think in terms of where it's coming from, it's a very similar approach.
Which of these, of this set, would you say lyrically is the strongest? Which is the one that you would look back on and say, I really nailed the words on that one?
I never think that ever, but I'm proud of some of them. There's one called Index, which I think is, you know, the funny thing about writing songs is that often what you hear in your head is never quite what you get in reality. Epic and... fantastic and sometimes it comes out and it's good, or you think it's good, great, but it's never quite as epic as you imagined it. But sometimes things come out pretty close, and I think Index is one of those songs where it's come out pretty close to what I hoped it would, lyrically and musically. It's got an incredibly brooding sense of, quite sinister, about a guy. It's based on the John Fowles book The Collector, about the guy who, you know, collects butterflies, and kind of applies the same mentality to the way he looks at women and other people. I keep the rubbish what other people give away, and
keep all the pieces in a metal tray. Been misunderstood. I like the things that people seem to always overlook. I gather up and catalog it in a book I wrote. There's so much now that I forget if I don't make a note.
First one that you wrote of this set, which came first?
The first song I wrote was called Belle de Jour, which is like a little, almost a little miniature piece, which starts the second disc, and it's almost like an homage to movie composers like Ennio Morricone and Nino Rota, the European film composers from the 70s and 60s and 70s. And what I love about their music is that it has an almost childlike lullaby quality, but there's always something slightly sinister and dark going on underneath too. I don't know how they get that into their music, but they do. And I think Belle de Jour is kind of trying to tap into that kind of tradition.
The Hammond dulcimer is obviously very handy when it comes to getting some sinister sounds into their music. An amazing instrument that is.
Yeah, that one is actually an auto harp.
Right,
but it's you're right. It's very closely related to the Hammond dulcimer.
You can always you can bang the a piano as well, can't you?
You can bang the piano strings. It's all the same philosophy, yeah. Really. Yeah, of banging strings, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, threatening.
It is, isn't it? I wonder why that should be, because obviously it's a very, in some ways, it's a very warm...
Well, I think it's also the gaps as well. They tend to, Morricone's top lines tend to leave loads of gaps, don't they? They kind of like come at you in short bursts, the top lines.
Yes.
And I think the gaps are often sinister.
I think another reason it might be quite slightly sinister is because those kind of instruments, the hammer dulcimer, the auto harp, they almost like have a resonance with like music boxes and things like you remember from your childhood.
Childlike sinister, yeah.
Yeah, and that immediately takes you back to almost like a nursery rhyme. And of course, a lot of nursery rhymes are incredibly dark.
Well, they're about violence, aren't they?
They are, and incredibly sinister. And so maybe there's a kind of primal kind of connection there between the nursery and musical boxes and things like that. Thank you.
when one speaks to an artiste like yourself and you're kind of up and running with the project, do you find that kind of like suddenly you want to add a load of new ones in at the end? What are the ones that finished off the record as far as the creative process were concerned?
The last song I wrote for the record was a song called Remainder of the Black Dog, which is one of the more jazz-influenced pieces on the record. And it somehow completed the record for me. I knew that when that was written that that was the final piece.
That was the time to stop.
I can't explain it. Yeah, it's not like I wanted to stop. Well, I did, but it's not like I wanted to stop, but it's almost, putting a record for me together is like, I mean, I've always talked, you know, about the idea of the album as a musical continuum or a musical journey. And in order to complete an album, it's almost like you have to have all the pieces, the jigsaw pieces, to put it all together. I'm mixing my metaphors here a lot, but anyway, you get my point. It's that it's almost like, you know, you can have all this music, but there might be just one element missing. And for me, it was completed when that song came along.
Thank you.
Why not have 6 months off? Why are you touring this record?
I didn't do it on the last record, and I kind of said that I would wait until I had, you know, repertoire enough that I could do a full show. And I think
you going to do some Interhentes stuff as well?
Absolutely, right. Yeah. And I think the time has come now. I mean, effectively, I have three records now, if you count this as two records, which I kind of do think of it as two records. So I've got enough material, and I think the other thing that was very important to me is that this record, or the solo career as a whole, could not be dismissed as a side project. And I think it's easy for people to dismiss it as a side project. It was just a studio project. So in a way, I'm totally overcompensating, because the live show I'm going out with is bigger than anything I've gone out with Porcupine Tree even. So in terms of the projections and the screens and the multimedia aspect, and the band is a six-piece band. So in a way, it's all kind of overcompensating for the fact that I don't want people to think of this as a little vanity side project.
It's a bit of a beast, isn't it?
Well, it's big. Yeah, it's big in many respects. It's big in length. It's big in sort of the number of musical forces involved. You know, there's everything from a choir to woodwinds to strings to obviously the usual repertoire stuff. But it's a big. I've said it's my biggest project to date, and I didn't just mean in terms of, you know, the importance of the release in my life, but also in terms of the fact I'm going to tour it for the first time. It's a double CD, which is, of course, is quite a big chunk of music to release in one go. So it's big in many respects, yeah.
So I can't be sure. Now I haven't even got the will to eat. I'm lame and self-obsessed that I will concede.
Stephen Wilson's A Grace for Drowning. The album is out now on Blu-ray, vinyl, CD, and also available as a 4-disc deluxe edition, which includes Blu-ray, the 2 CDs, 1 CD with outtakes and demo material, plus a 120-page book, all available from burningshed.com. The single is out on October the 10th, a digital single which will feature the album version of the track, a special stripped back voice and piano version of it recorded by Stephen especially for the single, and also two remixes, the first being K-Scope label mates North Atlantic Oscillations take on Postcard, and the second the Necro Deathmort remix of Index. There's a mini site too, graceforDrowning.com, where you'll find a free download of the track Remainder the Black Dog, and as Stephen was mentioning, a tour in the offing. The dates listed at graceforDrowning.com, North America and Europe dates. There's only one UK date. It's in London on the 31st of October at Shepherd's Bush Empire. So Halloween night at Shepherd's Bush Empire. See you there. Stephen Wilson then, out now on K-Scope, Grace for Drowning. Pleasure having your company, as always. Do please stay in touch on Twitter at K-Scope Music, and of course via the website kscopemusic.com. Billy Reeves here. I will see you soon.